Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show. One more show to go before Scary Movie Month kicks off, and we're going out with a bang. I am joined for 9 from 99 Part 2 by Adam Risky. Hi, Adam.
Hey, man. I'm very excited about October.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited for this show. I really enjoyed our first 9 from 99 installment, So I'm excited to do 9 more movies.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I feel like a certain romanticism about only doing 2 of these, because so many go for the trilogy.
Okay. We're done after this, like, is what you're saying?
No, it's your call. It's your show. But if we only did 2,
yeah,
that would be like how there's only 2 Firefly family movies. There's not 3.
R.I.P. Sid Haig.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
We're
I met him once.
He passed away.
Did you ever meet him at a convention?
I never did, no.
He was very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have like a long conversation with him or anything, but everything that people were saying about how just friendly he was absolutely true. And it's great that, like, at least in that last 20 years that of the career bump that he got with playing Captain Spaulding.
Yeah.
And he was out with his fans like so often that I'm sure like he got, you know, a lot of love back to him for his career and his performances and stuff. And he seemed like a nice guy. So I'm happy at least for that. But yeah, rest in peace. We'll miss him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about 99 movies in just a little bit. I don't have anything for what have I seen anything good lately, because I was out of town and didn't get a chance to see any movies.
Okay.
But have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen some stuff, and then I can talk real quick about some of the stuff that you watched recently that you've talked about on other shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like It Chapter 2.
Okay.
I thought was okay.
Okay.
Hustlers, I thought was okay. 3 from Hell, I thought was not my jam.
Sure.
So we're all caught up.
All right, that was perfect. Wow, we did that really quickly.
Yeah. On Friday night, I went with Mark and saw Rambo Last Blood.
Do tell.
Rambo Last Blood is Taken with Rambo.
Oh.
And it's not very good. It's like 50 minutes of fridging Rambo.
Oh.
And then like 15 minutes of him killing so many people that some of them are just done in a montage.
Oh, wow.
And then like 10 minutes of end credits, including like a sizzle reel of greatest moments from the Rambo series.
Weirdly enough, that makes me want to see it.
But
the sizzle reel part makes me want to see it.
But they're done in like these weird, like Midsommar, like slow-mo morph things. It's not like the Freddy's Dead sizzle reel.
Oh, that's less appealing.
So it's just like, it's not like, oh, those are the best kills,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And then when they did the sizzle reel where they showed like the Rambo 2008 stuff, it just reminded me more of like, oh, this is just like a lesser version of Rambo 2008, because
okay,
they're very similar in that the goal is just let's show as much gruesome violence as possible.
Is it up to the same crazy standards of Rambo 2008?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
I'm not talked out of seeing it.
It is kind of gross feeling because there's a lot of xenophobic stuff in it, where everybody in Mexico is evil.
Right, okay.
I already mentioned like kind of the weird structure to it and all that. There are certain moments where it's like, oh my God, with some of the gore and the violence that is, I guess, enjoyable. Like, I laughed out loud a couple times, but it was just because I didn't know how else to react. But there's like certain things where like, they'll show like a loving shot of like a bag of, and it'll specifically say like magnesium shards or magnesium pellets. And I'm like, oh, somebody's going to get fucked up with magnesium.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. I mean, it's not though. I didn't think that it was like, it made me a worse person. Like the creator of Rambo said that this movie made him feel like.
Really?
Yeah. But I think that, because a lot of these reheated Stallone movies over the past few years have been pretty good, that it raises the bar in terms of your expectations a little
sure
bit. And this was very much like, I don't even know how to describe it with his stuff. It was more, it felt like a, like one of his like early 2000s movies where he didn't get it back yet.
Got it.
So it was like pre-Rocky Balboa.
Should he have fought like an alien hunter instead?
This is looking better and better.
Rambo v. Predator.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so whatever. I don't know. I could tell the people in the theater didn't like it because they left right away.
Oh.
Yeah.
They didn't even stay for the sizzle reel?
Not everybody, no.
Well, then how can they remember all the greatest hits of the franchise?
I don't know. I haven't seen Rambo 3, but I've seen the other ones.
I've seen it. It's been a long time.
Okay. But should I?
I mean, not really.
I love First Blood, and I think my
First
residual affection for that carries me through. Like, I don't like 2 that much.
It's not good.
4 is fun.
It's decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But First Blood is really, really great.
But I think 4 also... spoilers for The Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis is a ghost. But I think, like, at the end of 4, it ends... It leaves Rambo in, like, kind of a nice place.
Right.
And the fact that they pick it up and don't leave him in a place that's as interesting,
okay,
is a bummer.
Okay.
So...
Got it.
I don't know. Yeah. And then I saw Echo in the Canyon. Have you heard about that?
I don't believe so.
It is a documentary about Laurel Canyon in the mid-60s and all of the artists that lived in Laurel Canyon. So okay. It was like the Beach Boys, not Van Morrison, Jackson Browne, Mamas and the Papas, Cream, Buffalo Springfield, The Birds. So the movie is sort of hosted by Jacob Dylan, which is a mistake. Jacob Dylan seems very, it's like a, remember in like Side by Side, how like Keanu Reeves kind of is like the through line, yeah, to take you through the movie. So Jacob Dylan is sort of like in that same capacity. And unfortunately, I think like he takes away the focus too much, because he'll do things where him and then like more current artists like himself or Beck or Fiona Apple or Regina Spektor will perform songs by these artists at like a concert at the Orpheum or whatever. And there's too many of those scenes. And then there's too much stuff about him and like Beck sitting on a couch, like looking at old LPs.
You had me at couch.
Yeah. Well, I watched on a couch. It's a good place to see it. But the stories themselves, like when they're interviewing, you know, Michelle Nichols or David Crosby and stuff like that, it's really interesting. Okay. And like they keep showing all these shots of the movie Model Shop with Gary Lockwood. It's from like the late 60s, but it's on my radar because Brian from Pure Cinema was telling me about how good it was. And then also that movie sort of inspired the scenes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where Brad Pitt is driving all over LA.
Right, right. Okay.
So that's kind of inspired by like Model Shop. And they keep showing that with this movie because it's showing kind of like, this is what the 60s were like in 65 to 67 or whatever. So it made me want to watch Model Shop a lot. So I rented that, but I haven't watched it yet. But Echo in the Canyon was kind of disappointing.
Okay.
Like I wanted a little bit more kind of, I don't know, just like more about the subjects itself, right, and not right, so much like appreciation.
Got it.
And then I watched a movie that you gave to me. And
oh,
I need to get out of my house.
I'm sorry, by the way.
American Nightmares?
Yeah. That DVD is cursed, by the way.
How did you get it?
It was sent to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I even by like VOD standards, like I have no idea when this came out or like what happened.
Right after Tales from the Hood 2. I feel like I got it within a few weeks.
Yeah, they were right on top of each other. It was very strange.
Because yeah, it's the same creative team.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was better than Tales from the Hood 2.
Okay. I already don't remember either movie, but I remember Tales from the Hood 2 better.
Okay. Yeah, this one has... I wrote down the segment, so maybe this will jog your memory.
It won't.
Okay. There were hackers, and like the host was Danny Trejo.
I remember Danny Trejo.
And Nichelle Nichols was like a tarot card lady with Danny Trejo.
Nope.
Chris Kattan was a clown in one segment.
I feel like I sort of remember Chris Kattan being in the movie.
Clarence Williams III was a crazy old man who like tricked Healer in one segment.
Nope.
That was probably my favorite segment, okay, just because it was Clarence Williams III.
Right.
There was one about like abortion and the baby was the devil at the end. And like pro-choice people. There was one where it was like a Twilight Zone parallel universe where the gimmick was it was like segregated, but it was like segregated against people who had like dark hair.
That sort of rings a bell.
Like Rusty Cundiff was the sheriff.
Yeah, that one I remember.
Yeah, there was one with Tamala Jones where it was like about a dating site and there was a robot guy that was her perfect man.
Yes, I totally remember that. I would have thought that was from Tales from the Hood too.
Yeah, it kind of did feel like Tales from the Hood too. These were like interchangeable. Like, I don't know. There was one about like a talk radio host who like was anti-women and then like he became a woman.
Kind of remember that.
There was one where Jay Moore was a politician.
I remember Jay Moore being in the movie.
Yeah, and then like the dude from My Name is Earl, who I can only think of as the dude from My Name is Earl, was on death row. Yeah, Crabman.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was not good. And the movie is...
There were so many segments though.
There was like, yeah, eight.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And it was Tales from the Hood 2 only had like
four or five.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird because I'm like grading it more positively because it's not Tales from the Hood 2.
Sure.
But only because that's like saying instead of giving it 0 stars, I give it 0.25. but it's such a bummer, like seeing this fall from grace.
Yeah.
I guess. And these movies are so like cheap.
Yeah, that's
looking.
Part of the problem is just they had no money to make it.
And they think that they're really funny when they're not really funny, and it's like to an extent that's just embarrassing.
Yeah.
And also, and this isn't just American Nightmares or Tales from the Hood 2, but I'm getting kind of tired of every movie is about society and about social issues.
Sure.
I get it. It's a product of the time.
Right.
But also, I feel like it's either it's just not subtle enough where like you can still enjoy it as text. Like
right.
All you
sure.
can focus
right, right,
on
right.
it is as subtext.
Right.
And I think like this movie is very much, I mean, like in a hit you over the head Twilight Zone way. That's not fun.
Yeah.
But the last two I watched yesterday were oldies but goodies.
Oh, good.
I DVR'd Sleeping with the Enemy and rewatched it. And let me tell you, until October 1st, I am going to go on a 90s thriller tear.
Ooh.
Because Sleeping with the Enemy scratched the itch that I needed. I don't know what it was, but like I saw this movie when I was like 10 years old because it was on cable all the time. And I just, whatever. I was a kid. Like, I wasn't ready for Sleeping with the Enemy. It didn't have much effect on me. And this time, I just enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I think for what it is, it's very well made. I think I really like the Julia Roberts. I think the performance is good, but, like, I really like her character in this movie because she's not, like, I think a lot of these movies where it's, like, a woman Avenger, they go too much from, like, 0 to 60, where it's like she's super meek at the beginning, but then she's like a warrior. And I feel like this one, she felt like a real person.
Okay.
And she had moments of assertiveness, but it's like under duress, and like she's obviously terrified when she's like attacking Patrick Bergen back and everything like that. And it was just nice to see like these. Like, I'm like, Patrick Bergen, I haven't thought about him, or Kevin Anderson.
Like
I'm like, I haven't thought about these people in forever. But I don't know, there's just like a certain level of, even in these like kind of trashy thrillers, of like craftsmanship to them, and like they feel like real movies.
Right.
And like, I'm thinking that we need to have like the Joseph Rubin bump instituted, because he has this.
Okay.
He has The Good Son.
Okay.
He has Money Train.
All right.
I mean, like, rub bump?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Good Son takes me out of it a little bit
because
I'm not a huge fan of that movie.
The junior novelization. Well, I don't even think it was a junior novelization, but the novelization of The Good Son, it adds the layers that you're looking for.
Oh, all right.
Let me just tell you that up front. really good stuff.
When the movie was over, did you go to your pantry and, like, straighten all the cans?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't have any cans in
you
my pantry.
You learned all the right lessons.
they're all expired and like, I don't know, cans, who does that?
They still need to be in perfect order.
That is true. That is true. So I'm thinking like, I'm going to go back to Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Okay.
Next.
That's an obvious single white female.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be another one.
We going as deep as, like, consenting adults? Like,
yeah, oh, I'm going all in. I'm going deceived. I'm going guilty as sin.
Oh, God. I'm just, that's a Sidney Lumet movie.
Color of Night. I'm just running
Color of Night is bananas.
Oh, I've seen it.
I know, but, like, have you seen it recently?
No.
Because I watched way... I couldn't sleep one night, and I watched... way too much of it on cable, and I just was like, that's the plot of this movie. He's traumatized and can no longer see the color red.
Yeah,
that's in a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the twist of that movie is is bonkers. That gotta admire that guy made The Stuntman. Like, that's a Richard Rush movie.
Yeah,
it's amazing to me.
That's when what was her name? This is gonna be a thing.
Jane March.
Yeah,
turns out she was just an imp wearing angel's wings.
That's like, I love that scene so much because it's like the best directed Mentos commercial ever. He even like pops a mint or something like before it happens. I'm wondering if it's knowing that he did that. Yeah. No, do you think like Bruce Willis saw Basic Instinct and was just like, yeah, I gotta get in on this.
Yeah.
This thing. Yeah.
I'm just like Michael Douglas. No, you're not Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's a spectacularly bad movie with an amazing cast.
Yeah. Him, Leslie Ann Warren, I remember, was in it.
Bakula.
Oh, yeah. Bakula was in it. Wasn't he the guy Lance who got Henriksen. Murdered at the beginning? Bakula?
Bakula does get murdered at the beginning. Lance Henriksen.
Yeah.
Kevin J. O'Connor. Possibly Brad Dourif.
Yeah, I'm watching Color, but and then last night I rewatched Time Cop for the first time in had to have been 20 years.
Okay,
and
Hyams bump is a real thing.
Hyams bump is a real thing. All right, I'm just gonna get the one negative out about Time Cop because I have this complaint with Time Cop through The Relic. He shouldn't be his own cinematographer.
All right,
because those movies are too dark.
Yeah.
And I'm including...
He has excellent vision. That's the problem.
I guess. I don't know. He can see like a shark underwater, apparently, because nobody else can see what he's seeing. But no, that movie's like... It's obviously the classy Van Damme movie.
Right.
And it's the
big... It's Under Siege.
It's his Ridge Cinema's Not Town and Country Mall movie. But I really liked it. And I like that it's so sweet. It's kind of like the crux of this movie is that he's trying to... it's emotional money in the bank whenever you have these time travel movies because it's always about fixing past mistakes and rectifying these wrongs and stuff. And I think him and Mia Sara make for like a cute couple in a way that like Van Damme's never like a cute couple with anyone because he doesn't...
Maybe Rosanna Arquette.
Yeah, but they're not cute. They're just hot.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, they're just farmhouse sex heat. But I really liked the movie. I thought it was fun. It made me once again appreciate when Bruce McGill pops up in a movie.
Sure.
I'm just like, man, this guy's just
character
actor royalty.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I think it's like one of Van Damme's best performances.
It's certainly his slickest movie.
Yeah.
And it pops into my head all the time because of that rule about how you can't occupy the same space and sort of what becomes of Ron Silver.
Turns into the blob.
He does totally blob out.
Yeah.
That occupies space in my brain, like a permanent place in my brain.
Yeah. I don't know. I had it on a four-movie set of Van Damme movies.
Okay.
It was that, Hard Target.
All the Universals.
The Quest.
Sudden Death.
And Street Fighter.
Oh. Okay.
You're on this four.
Got it.
And I always go to Hard Target or Street Fighter, and hardly ever Time Cop or The Quest. So this
I understand
one
of
like,
those.
Yeah. Street Fighter I have an odd affection for.
Sure.
Yeah. I could do the entire speech that he gives to the troops.
Yeah.
I'm going to, from memory, he's like, troopers, I just received new orders. He's just like... We'll have died for nothing, but we can all go home. And then he skips ahead and he's like, I'm going to tell you what I do. I'm going to get in my boat. I'm going to go up river. I'm going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard that him and every Bison wannabe is going to feel it. Now who wants to go home? It wants to go with me! And, like, if you listen to that, you would overthrow your government, too. Like, he disobeys Congress and decides his own rules of engagement.
I clearly need to revisit that movie
Street
as well.
Street Fighter is a gem.
I never played the game, so I have no affection for, like, the source material.
I was all in on the characters before I saw the movie because my parents forbade me for what... They let me watch any movie I wanted, but they were like, Mortal Kombat has blood, you can't play that video game.
Okay.
So I was just like, okay, I'll just play Street Fighter. Yeah. And there's no blood, but it's like the same mash-em-up thing.
Right, right,
so.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, so that's what I've seen lately.
That's the thank you for the jingle.
Yeah.
I was out in L.A. with our friends Elric Kane and Brian Sauer from the Pure Cinema podcast on a secret Pure Cinema mission. More on that later in October, but had a really good time. Yeah, it was really fun.
How'd you do at horror trivia?
I didn't play. I just observed.
Oh, yeah. Was it super specific? Like you needed to like know your shit?
Or? Some stuff, okay. And then some stuff. Like, I did okay.
Okay.
I didn't do terribly, but I wasn't like, I knew every question. There was one that was just about makeup effects, a whole category that was just about makeup effects that I thought was difficult.
Yeah.
Because I don't memorize who does the makeup effects on a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But it was a really good time.
Good.
Kept me from seeing movies, however. We tried to go see either Ad Astra or Rambo Last Blood and failed at seeing both, so...
It's okay.
Yeah.
That's what the A-list is for.
That's right. I'm not dying to see Ad Astra.
I'm just tired of IMAX fall space movie about your dad.
Right.
It's always about the dad.
Right.
I want one movie where it's like about a father and son, but it turns out it's really about Neptune.
Oh, all right.
Like, wouldn't that be cool? Like a little flip the script.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about our 9 from 99. We've got 9 1999 titles that we're going to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Last time you picked 5, I picked 4. This time we switched.
Yes.
I picked 5, you picked 4.
Correct.
So I should go first, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, then let's lead off with Doug Liman's Go.
Okay.
This is a movie I revisit every couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of an anthology, but all the stories... intertwine with one another. It's told not out of sequence, but it sort of overlaps and jumps around in time. it's interesting because in 99 it was definitely like capturing a specific scene. It was definitely capturing like the whole rave scene in a way that, at least to me in suburban Chicago, felt like it knew something that I didn't.
Yeah.
These days, I think that scene has morphed into something else, so I don't think it really exists in the same way anymore. So that kind of dates the movie, but it's got a really great cast.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Taye Diggs story stands out to me. It feels like it's from a different movie.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
I mean, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But to me, it feels like it's from a different movie.
Okay. It's the one that stands out to me, like, on this rewatch, and this is maybe, like, the fifth time I've seen Go.
I've seen it a lot, too.
Yeah, it's very rewatchable.
It is.
That was the one that popped for me for some reason. Like, I really liked it. I thought it was really fun. It just, like, kind of the manicness of it, because I think the other two segments are... A little, I mean, like, say, you know, the middle segment with Taye Diggs is like 100 miles per hour. The other two are like 60 miles per hour. So
sure.
I don't know. It just like, it felt like a really fun, crazy anthology segment to me.
Sure.
And when you said like it dating the movie, I kind of just want to date the movie because like, I really like this movie. And I liked it more this time than I ever have.
Interesting.
Because like, I liked it at the in 99. I couldn't get out of my head that it was like a Pulp Fiction knockoff. And still, like, I think
it got talked about a lot, I feel like, when the movie came out.
It did, yeah. And I remember, like, Entertainment Weekly gave it an A. And for whatever reason at the time, like, I put a lot of credence into Entertainment Weekly. And I was just like, it got an A. It got an A.
This is a perfect movie.
I'm like, why are we going on a campus visit this weekend when I could be seeing the movie that Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman or Lisa Schwartzbaum, I don't remember who, gave an A. For exemplary.
Yes.
So
Exemplary.
Yeah. So I didn't see it in theaters for whatever reason. I saw it on video. I remember I rented it at Blockbuster and got a job application at Blockbuster, and that's when it started.
Nice.
That's when the Blockbuster thing started. But yeah, I don't know. I find in a very nostalgic way, like, especially the music. Like, I really like the music in the movie, especially that No Doubt song, I think is maybe one of their best songs.
Okay. If you gave me $100 and told me to name No Doubt's best song, I would have to tell you to keep your $100.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't do it.
You didn't get down with Possum King, or Possum King, Tragic Kingdom?
I was never down with Tragic Kingdom.
Interesting.
No. Much more down with Possum Kingdom.
Possum Kingdom's the best. Toadies are on my Mount Rushmore of alternative bands.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know who the fourth one would be. It switches out. But
all right,
it would
who
be
are the three?
STP and Toadies are always
STP.
There. And then Nirvana.
I don't even know you anymore.
Are you kidding me? You don't like STP?
No. No. I couldn't name one Stone Temple Pilots song that I like.
You're out of your mind. You don't like Plush?
No.
You don't like Big Empty?
No, I like that even less than
these conversations kill.
Is Big Empty the one from The Crow?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't like it.
Do 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 do. No?
Nope, not a Stone Temple Pilots.
You don't like Interstate Love Song?
No, I do not.
You don't like Vaseline?
You know what? I do not.
You don't like Sour Girl?
Ooh, I really don't like Sour Girl.
You don't like I Am, but you don't like Dead and Bloated?
Dead and Bloated, yeah. Sex type thing.
I saw a cover band of Stone Temple Pilots.
I
it
know
was
you
really
did.
Good.
What were they called? Which song were they named after?
Shit. I'll come up with it.
Okay.
I don't remember. Anyways, go. I like all the segments. I think that I don't know what it is. Like at the time, I think because I just thought that he was stupid because he was like the silly bad guy from Scream 2.
Right.
I didn't like Timothy Oliphant, but like I really like Timothy Oliphant now, so I'm just kind of like I was more into that performance too.
He gives a little bit of like a Ray Liotta from Something Wild.
Yeah.
Like
good call.
He's charming, but he might also actually be dangerous.
Yes. Yeah. Katie Holmes doesn't really work for me in this movie.
No, she's like the most famous person at the time,
yeah.
But it's she doesn't have a character to play. Yeah. Sarah Polley, though, this was the movie.
Okay.
I had seen Sarah Polley in other stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it. Because, like, I had probably seen Baron Munchausen at this point. I had probably seen The Sweet Hereafter by this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't put it together that it was all the same person. So this was the movie that really put Sarah Polley on my radar. And it was like, oh, my God, who is that?
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely stands out. She's got, like, a weird, like, she would be Christina Ricci's friend type thing going on.
She's really great. And I actually really like... I'm not necessarily a fan of either actor, but the Scott Wolf, Jay Moore segment,
it's
I like
funny.
How weird it gets, and when they finally get to William Finley's apartment, and he starts getting naked and trying to sell them Confederated products.
Oh, God, that like, made me crack up.
It's
so,
really, yeah. All this, Jane Krakowski is really funny, like, it just gets really twisted.
I love his, Jay Moore's delivery. He's like, you want us to sell Amway? And he's like, it's Confederated products.
It's a different
kind of product.
Yeah. It's a different something.
Quality
of product. I can't remember what the first part is, though. It's a different company or something. It's a different company. It's a different quality of product.
Yeah. It's such. He's really funny in that movie.
He is.
Yeah.
He needs to do more comedy.
Yeah. And also, I just over time, I've really, like, I thought he kind of fell off for a bit, but, like, I really like Doug Liman movies.
This was his first movie after Swingers.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, he's the real deal. He can do this, you know, another, a bigger movie.
And he's also kind of, like, could do a lot of different things. Like, he could do comedy, but, like, Edge of Tomorrow is a great action movie.
It is. Bourne Identity is really
good.
The
first
good,
one's
the original.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
He's had a couple that I haven't seen. Like, I miss the Valerie Plame movie.
Is that Fair Game?
Yes.
That one was okay.
And
it's
I feel
not as
like,
good as the Cindy Crawford one.
I even remember, no, very few movies are as good as that movie. I even at the time, I don't know that I still feel this way, but at the time, I liked Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I could watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like one of those middle theater Barrington movies where it's just like, it's Friday night and I'm in the middle theater in Barrington and it gets kind of a lift for that.
Right.
But yeah, it's not like one of my favorites.
No.
And I'm a Jumper apologist.
I forgot about Jumper.
Jumper's got some shit in it, man.
I need to obviously revisit Jumper.
There's Jumpers and there's Paladins, and the Paladins are chasing the Jumpers.
What is Doug Liman's like most recent movie?
He directed a movie that keeps getting delayed.
Oh, that's
with Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley. But it's supposed to be in like production hell, and they've had to reshoot basically the entire movie.
Oh, I would have said I'm in on that, but now you just talked me out of it.
Yeah. I think maybe it was Edge of Tomorrow before that.
For real?
Possibly.
Unfortunately, I'm on the IMDb app, and it's giving me all producer stuff first, but I just want director stuff.
I can't believe you don't like Stone Temple Pilots more.
I'm really sorry.
Who would be on your Mount Rushmore alternative grunge bands?
I don't know, because I don't... I used to like a lot of those bands, and I don't really anymore. Like, I really love Pearl Jam.
You don't get down with Lithium anymore?
I like listening to Lithium, don't get me wrong. But even like, whereas I once loved Pearl Jam, like, I was in my sister's car the other day and she had the Pearl Jam station on, and I just was like, there's nothing for me here. There's no melody. There's nothing to grab me.
Yeah.
Nirvana would be on there. Mm-hmm. 90s Weezer would be on there.
Yeah. Q101 was like my KHJ. Like I would.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. Sorry, B96. Faithful.
Did you
bring up his filmography?
The Wall, I didn't see.
I didn't see that either. No,
American Made, I didn't really like.
I liked American Made. It was like Blow, too, but I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. American Made, I guess, is his most recent.
Okay. Yeah. Did you read that book, Best Movie Year Ever, about the movies?
I haven't. We have it. Erica checked it out from the library.
It's a quick read.
We have it, but I haven't read it.
I barely read books, and it took me like two nights to read it. I just ran through it.
Okay.
But there's a lot of interesting stuff about kind of how nuts Doug Liman was when he was like attending like the Sundance parties for Go and things like that. He was just kind of like your... It was like very entourage-y kind of, but it was interesting. And like that book is really, really solid. So if anybody's listening and likes the content of this show and the movies of 1999, if you read the book, it'll convince you that there's no other year of movies you need to watch.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, again, doing this show, it was just like even the slightly deeper cuts, and we didn't go super deep, but even the slightly deeper cuts are like, these are such solid movies that... We could really do a third show if we wanted to, because there's still enough stuff to talk about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we could easily find 9 more.
Yeah.
And then we still have... Yeah, we should probably do another show, because we got to do our top 10s for 99.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and I didn't prepare that.
Shoot.
Yeah. All right.
My top 10 from 99 would be very different now than it was in 99. Spoilers, American Beauty was on my top 10.
Yeah, it was on my top 10 also. I was way in the bag for American Beauty back in the day. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't even think, like, I could rewatch it now.
No, probably not.
Because what's the point?
Right.
It would just be there to make me feel uncomfortable. So, anyways.
Mina Suvari gives a great performance in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody gives a good performance. Like, I'm not... But she never really got recognized for how good she is in that movie.
No. Yeah, Mina Suvari's a tad bit underrated, because she was good in that. I liked her in American Pie, and she's really good in Stuck.
She's the heart of American Pie. I really like Stuck. I saw it at the Music
Box.
Yeah,
you were the only one who saw it at the Music Box besides me.
JB, because he and I saw it together.
Us three.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
I haven't seen it since then. I do own it, I think, on Blu-ray somewhere.
I've seen it a couple times. It holds up.
Okay.
Yeah. I love Stewie Gordman.
Stewie Gordman. Stewie. He's a great filmmaker.
You know, Stewie Gordman. Oh, that reminds me. When I was...
The director of Reanimator.
I was having dinner with Mark before he saw Rambo.
Yeah.
And I ordered an Ampfultizer sampler.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, like, I'm not smart anymore. I'm, like, reverse phenomenoning.
John Travolta is phenomenon. I don't remember his name in Phenomenon.
Oh, God. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's from 96. That's for our 96. That's for our 6 from 96 show.
which is coming up.
Yes.
Okay, so the Taye Diggs segment is your favorite.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's just, I like its kind of zany energy that it has to it. And I find it very funny that they're always leaving incriminating evidence to tie directly back to Timothy Oliphant, like,
right,
everywhere.
Right.
Like, it's his credit card that's just like the paper trail is going all over the place. I love it.
His name is George, George Malley?
That sounds right.
Yeah. John Travolta is George Malley. Malley.
Yeah. John Travolta is Vic Deacons. Ain't it cool?
Not a fan of that movie.
I'm kind of pissed that when I met Travolta, I didn't say, wee, what a predicament. I could have said, like, I didn't know if I should get Saturday Night Fever or Pulp Fiction. Wee, what a predicament.
I must become him.
God, that movie's so good. Don't remake Face Off, studios.
There are other ideas you could probably...
I would only want to see a sequel to Face Off if it was now Travolta and now Nick Cage and it was made straight to VOD.
Oh, for sure.
Then, like, I would totally watch
it. Was born inside of a Redbox.
Yeah.
Shot on location inside your Redbox.
Are you listening, Rob? I think this is your stab at being on a tour.
Directed by Jesse V. Johnson.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I love it.
I'm in.
Yeah. So, anything else about Go?
No, we can move on.
All right. So, my turn to pick?
Yeah.
Should I just pick from my list or from your list, too?
Oh, it's
a free-for-all?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with Lake Placid.
Okay.
Okay. So, Lake Placid is a movie that I only saw once when it came out, and I remember being kind of, like, lukewarm with it, and I enjoyed it more this time. I think that... unless you know going in, it's disarmingly funny. I had kind of a wet hot American summer moment with this movie where you just, like, kind of break where you're like, oh my God, that was, like, one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And then the rest of the movie kind of follows suit. And for me, it was when they set up for the first 10 minutes who some of the characters are, most specifically Bridget Fonda, and she's flying in a helicopter over to the site where the lake with the alligator or the crocodile or whatever. Is it a crocodile or alligator?
Good question.
All right, anyways. So she's flying, and then the helicopter pilot or the Cessna pilot or whatever is giving her...
Played by?
Who is it?
Steve Miner.
Oh, that's Steve Miner?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's telling her something like about their heading or like they're about to land, and she's like... Excuse me, can you not talk to me for the rest of the flight, please? Thank you. And it's just like this really, like, quick cutaway joke. And I was like, oh, I'm going to like this movie. And then Oliver Platt shows up, and he's hilarious.
He's on his own planet in this movie.
And Brendan Gleeson's really funny in this movie. Like, they just don't like each other, and, like, their butting heads throughout the whole movie is just extremely funny. I think that when it's a comedy, and it's... almost always a comedy, but like when it's a comedy, it's at its best. The only complaint I have about it is that I think the whole movie seems like a big goof, and it doesn't work for me as I'm leaving the movie, because the last shot of the movie is like this giant alligator being driven down the highway, and it's like knocked out and it's being driven to like a new location, and that is kind of a weird, like, kind of joke shot to end the movie on. I don't know why I wanted it all of a sudden to become, like, a thriller or something by the end. But for whatever reason, the peanut butter and the jelly didn't mix completely for me. But I like it. I do like the movie.
I was weirdly indifferent on it the first time I saw it, too. I think Erica and I saw it together. This was, like, 99 was really the first year where we saw every movie together. Because we, I guess, like, first started... Well, I don't know if we were officially dating in 99, but this is when we spent a lot of time together and saw every movie together. So we saw Lake Placid together, and I think maybe not knowing that it was supposed to be such a comedy, I also was like, huh, that was a weird movie, and only 80 minutes long. You know, and now I'm like, only 80 minutes long?
It's
I love
great.
This movie.
Great.
You know, the dialogue gets a little bit repetitive because David E. Kelly wrote it and has essentially written every character to be the same.
Yeah.
So everyone is sniping at each other for 80 minutes.
They're all Ally McBeal characters.
Right. Yeah. And they kind of snipe at each other in the same way. But the actors each bring something to their performances that mm-hmm. makes them a little bit different.
Yeah.
And if you told me just there's a movie where Bridget Fonda and Bill Pullman and Oliver Platt and Brendan Gleeson, just those four, yeah. like, are going to hang out around a lake and camp together, I'd be like, yeah, I will see that movie.
This could be like a high school reunion comedy, like right. Indian Summer, and it would right. be amazing. Yeah.
Oh, and there's a giant crocodile? Okay, yeah great. There's only like two moments of actual horror.
Yeah.
One is somebody getting bisected, and one is somebody getting beheaded.
Mm-hmm.
And both, I think, are pretty well done. I like the reveal of both.
Yeah.
When we get to the whole twist, and I guess spoilers for Lake Placid, there's a twist near the end of the movie where it's revealed that there are actually two giant crocodiles. But it's handled like so much of the rest of the movie with just a shrug, where it's like, wait, yeah. there's two? Boom, they blow one up. Okay, back to one. It's like,
I thought that was kind of funny, but like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't
amount to
give
anything.
The moment. There's no moment for it to land. It's just right. like zip past real quick.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is kind of funny, but at the same time, like, for dramatic effect, which I right. don't know if this movie's ever intending for dramatic effect, it doesn't really work.
If this is a weird yeah. exercise in subverting your expectations, yeah. then I guess it does work in that way.
I love that it exists. Like,
yeah.
you don't get movies this kind of quirky usually anymore. And
no.
Can you imagine, like, being a horror fan, like, but not a horror fan that's, like, wants all the colors of the rainbow, like, just wants a specific, they're there for Crawl, and they
right,
go see
right.
Placid
oh, yeah.
on opening
oh,
night.
Forget it.
I mean, yeah, at least they had Deep Blue Sea like 2 weeks later to like,
which, and I
yeah.
enjoy Deep Blue Sea yeah. and I enjoy Crawl.
Yeah.
I would probably watch Lake Placid again before either of them.
Okay. See, I like the other two better, but I don't
which
dislike
is
Lake
totally
Placid.
Totally understandable.
Yeah. yeah. I think part of what draws me away from Lake Placid a little bit, and this is more just because of the casting, it became for a while like this joke about Betty White being
oh, yeah,
dirty,
yeah,
and
yeah.
like, I just never thought it was funny, and I find it obnoxious.
Yes.
So she's kind of, you know, like the Don Rickles of this movie, where
right.
it's like every punchline is the Betty White joke.
But Meredith Salinger shows up, too. And
she
like,
does,
how can you dislike
yeah.
a movie where Meredith Salinger shows up?
I don't.
No.
I think it's really funny at the end when Bill Pullman and Bridget Fonda almost, like, don't go off together at the end.
Right.
And then they're just like, I have too much stuff in the front seat of my car. And then she gets to the car, and it's just he has to move over his sleeping bag. And she's like, that's all it was.
Bill Pullman rules. I just
he really does.
Said.
Yeah.
I love Bill Pullman.
Oh, he's great.
And Steve Miner is a super underrated director.
What else has he done?
Friday the 13th Part 2.
That's right.
Have you watched that one yet?
Not yet.
Damn
I'm saving it,
man.
For October. I got 2 and 6.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Halloween H2O, which,
yeah.
you know, not great, but
I'm
well
okay
directed. Friday the 13th Part 3.
Okay.
House.
Never saw it.
You never seen House?
No.
Oh, it's good.
Okay. I always like it mixes together with Amityville, and I just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soul Man, which is a bit of a blight on his
yeah.
filmography, so let's not hold that against him too much. But his horror stuff is really, really solid. Warlock, he made the original Warlock.
Yeah.
He's just really solid. I don't know.
Cool.
I think his work here is good and sort of not unassuming, but like he's a professional about it. It
mm-hmm.
looks good.
Yeah.
The CG.
Yeah.
I don't know, did we talk about the CG? Like, it's 99, and
yeah.
they're trying to do the giant alligator or crocodile, whatever. We've been using them interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a crocodile, but I honestly don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks, it's like eraser level.
The Stan
CG.
Winston practical crocodiles look amazing.
Yes.
But yeah, like when the thing is jumping
when it gets
out
up onto
to eat
land.
The bear and
right.
stuff like that, it's a little shitty.
All right. So he also made the 2008 remake of Day of the Dead, which is truly a piece of shit.
Okay.
And Texas Rangers, which isn't great, but I can totally watch it anytime it's on TV.
Okay.
So he does have a few movies on there that are not great, and he's done a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Big Bully with Tom Arnold and Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
My Father the Hero.
I know of it.
Forever Young.
I know of it.
So we're talking mostly his horror stuff. Yeah. It's really solid. Yeah. When he ventures into comedy and family films, it's not great.
Yeah. All right.
Lake Placid.
Lake Placid.
My pick?
Yes.
I'm going to go with The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Okay.
A movie that I don't think I had seen since 1999, but I think in 99 made my top 10 list. And this movie really caught me by surprise. It was one that I didn't really want to see. It looked like Miramax. It's not a Miramax movie, but it looked like the
looked like Downton Abbey.
It looks like the movie that Miramax makes to win Oscars. It's a period film. It's set in Europe. It has, you know, Matt Damon and Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow and Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is a great cast, but in a different movie, I'm sleeping through that movie. You know, like it's when it's designed to just win Oscars. It's directed by Anthony Minghella. I mean, on paper, this movie should repel me.
Yeah.
I was not familiar with the Patricia Highsmith novel. I'd never read it. I hadn't seen it in like 20 years. It knocked me out back in 99 when I saw it on the same day as Any Given Sunday and Galaxy Quest.
That is a great day.
That was a triple feature. Like, that's how good 99 was. Yeah. And it really knocked me out. Revisiting it this time, I still really liked it. It felt long to me. The cast is great. I feel like this was the movie, because I don't know that I had seen Gattaca at this point. This was the movie that I think put Jude Law on my radar. And I was like, oh my God, who is that? Jude Law, he's so good in this movie. It put Cate Blanchett on my radar.
Yep.
Because I hadn't seen Elizabeth.
Same.
I knew, you know, most of the other actors. But it was interesting to watch, because we're now 2 years post Good Will Hunting. And Ben Affleck was kind of going the more Hollywood route. And Matt Damon was going the more thinking man's art movie route. And I think this is a nice mixture of art movie and, like, commercial kind of thriller.
Yeah, it doesn't feel inaccessible to, like, it doesn't feel like it would be, like, a landmark century theater. It feels like something
that looks like it on the surface. If you turn the sound down, it looks like it could be a landmark century movie.
Yeah. Although, I mean, and obviously they shot pretty much all of it on locations, it looks like. I mean, it's a beautiful looking movie.
It's
I remember JB saying, like, I think it was with Mamma Mia, that it's like a travelogue to Greece, and this very much feels that way with, like, Italy and everything. I saw it winter break 99. I was 17. I didn't give it the time of day. It was just, like, not my speed at the moment. So rewatching it this time was my first time since then, and it knocked me out this time. Okay. I really liked it a lot. I think that it's very interesting in how, I mean, he's obviously, like, a sociopath, but they don't ever underline it, really. It's, like, gradual. Like, you can see the opportunities, and he's taking advantage of them. So it's like these little, it's that Ivanka Trump gross thing where it's just like, never correct somebody if they assume something better of you. It's like that thing that he's doing. And I agree with you. I mean, like, Jude Law, this is probably my favorite performance of his I've seen in any of his movies. I think he's just absolutely terrific. He's got a tough task because he's basically playing the part of the guy that the schlub aspires to be.
Right.
And on the surface, yeah, I mean, like, he's just so charismatic, and you see his lifestyle and, like, kind of how he lives to the fullest on first glance and everything like that. And it's, he embodies that really, really well. And then, yeah, like you said, I mean, like, the cast is so deep. It's just nice to see, like, a scene where, you know, in one scene it's like Philip Baker Hall, and then it's James Rebhorn, and then it's Cate Blanchett and Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's, like, when he's playing a dick, there's, like, nothing better than Philip Seymour Hoffman playing a dick in a movie. He's just like, how's the peeping, Tom? How's the peeping? It's just, it's great. Like, and I think the movie is, for, you know, a quote-unquote classy movie, it's very creepy.
Sure.
It's very, very creepy, but in a way that's, I don't know. I just dug it. I really liked it a lot. There's a couple scenes in the movie that I'm like, ugh, I want this to be over. Like, the whole, like, them singing, like, that Americano song, oh, I was yeah. just like, just, like, I get it, like, in the context, but please, come on, stop it.
It never really plays itself as a thriller, which I think is interesting. It doesn't,
no.
It's not, it doesn't play with the grammar of a thriller, but yeah. it is, you know, ostensibly a thriller.
Yeah.
More of a character piece, I know, but, like, it is, you know, there's a guy trying to get away with something.
It reminded me of, did you ever see the movie The Minus Man with
Yes, but I don't remember it. I know Sheryl Crow was in it.
Yeah. I saw that on, like, it was, like, one of my free rentals one week. And this movie reminded me of that movie in both a good way, where it's just, yeah, the guy is just, it's played like a drama. It's almost right. like this, you're almost meant to, like, sympathize with him because he's the protagonist. Yeah. And, like, he can't live the way that he wants to for a myriad of reasons, like whether he's a he's closeted his homosexuality, or, like, you know, he's this poor kid and stuff like that, but it's like he's terrible also.
Right, right.
So I mean, like, it's kind of fun that they play that misdirect with you.
Yeah And the ending is really something.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah
it's great, because, like, there's a lot of those scenes, especially in the second half of the movie, where it's the Norman Bates thing in Psycho, where you want the car to sink into the swamp a bit and everything
right.
like that, because
right.
it's so tense, like, that he's going to get caught and revealed. And for whatever reason, like, you just don't want the person to be revealed. I don't know what that is, like, psychologically, but, like, I have that with so many movies where it's like, you just, no matter what awful thing this person's doing, you don't want them to be found out.
Right.
It's a really good movie. And, I don't think I've seen very many Anthony Minghella movies, and this makes me kind of want to do some homework a little bit.
I know I've seen The English Patient.
I haven't even seen The English Patient.
You're fine.
What else did he make? I'm blanking. I know he passed away a few years ago.
He made a movie with Matt Dillon called Mr. Wonderful.
Nope.
That was before he became, like, Oscar bait.
Yeah.
He made Cold Mountain.
Nope.
You never saw Cold Mountain?
I skipped it purposely.
Yeah, no, you were right to do that.
Yeah.
When
they say it's raining. I just remember that.
Breaking and Entering.
Nope.
With Jude Law and Robin Wright. And, you know, he made mostly movies that, like, I don't want to see. He didn't make that many movies, though. Truly, Madly, Deeply, Mr. Wonderful, The English Patient.
Truly, Madly, Deeply was the Alan Rickman movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I never saw it. Yeah,
Mr. Ripley,
I guess Ripley's
Cold
the only
Mountain,
one I see.
Breaking and Entering.
Did you ever see the Ripley's Game with John Malkovich?
I never did, no.
I kind of want to watch that now, too.
Is it a follow-up?
I think so. I think it's, like, supposed to pick up from him when he's, like, middle-aged.
Okay. That makes sense if it's John Malkovich. Yeah. It'd be weird if Malkovich was playing young Tom Ripley.
Yeah.
What do you think about Matt Damon in this movie?
Good. And it's different because it's you almost forget. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because, like, of the Bourne series or whatever, and then right on top of that he was doing, like, The Departed and Green Zone and stuff like that. I forgot that he kind of had, like, this kind of creepier, like, Courage Under Fire, Talented Mr. Ripley, like, deep, emaciated, twisted Jeremy Davies character actor thing in him.
Right.
So I dig it. I really liked it. I think he's good because he seems like the type of guy that's, you wouldn't suspect these things from him. He seems, like, very normal. Maybe just kind of, you know, like a puppy dog. Like, the thing that if there is one tiny flaw with the movie, I think that they, before calling bullshit on it, they let him leech for a way too long.
Okay.
Because I don't see that happening in real life. Like, I feel like I get where maybe it's appealing for a character like the Dickie Greenleaf character that Jude Law plays to bring kind of this person of low means into their world and, like, really kind of show off for them. But I don't know if it would last, like, where it's like, we're going to go on one last trip and then it's the end of the road. Or would they just say it's the end of the road? Like, you got to go.
Right.
So I don't know, but it's not a big deal. It doesn't take anything away from the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What's next?
I'm going to go with Detroit Rock City.
Okay.
This was the low point of the night for me.
It probably was for me as well.
Yeah.
And it was my pick.
Yeah. Do you like this more because you're a fan of Kiss?
Oh, for sure.
Because I don't dislike Kiss, but I'm not as big of a fan of it as you or Erica are. And, like, yeah. There was nothing for me in this movie.
Really?
Like, it reminded me a lot of Fanboys. It had a lot of the same beats.
Okay.
But three out of the four guys are, like, the most awful, scary people.
Well, Giuseppe Andrews isn't really.
He's kind of a creepy looking, weird,
he's a little bit creepy
guy.
Looking, but he's not a creep in the movie.
Doesn't he do something at some point that's, like, with Natasha Lyonne that's sort of sketchy? I can't remember.
He rescues her.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, always thinking of Deputy Winston with him. Oh, he wants to party.
Hey, man,
in Wambusa.
Where's the party, man?
Yeah, you have sexy hair. You have sexy shoes. I go up to Wambusa because I don't know what I'm all about. Me and
he's
my cousin,
a doctor,
we party hard
of being
at Wambusa.
A dog. Justin, call me Grim. Cabin Fever is pretty sweet.
Cabin Fever is real good. I don't understand why that movie isn't like on Turner. Like, that movie's great.
I never upgraded my DVD to Blu-ray because it got rid of a lot of the special features.
You fucking idiot. You ruined the party. I like when the dude swallows the harmonica.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Detroit Rock City, it's an Adam Rifkin movie.
Okay.
And his movies are, you know, he makes a lot of different kinds of movies, but he has a very particular, he is a little bit juvenile, and this is a very juvenile movie.
Yeah.
And it's by design. It's about, you know, kind of sex, drugs, rock and roll, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's obnoxious. A lot of the characters are obnoxious. I come down on the side of liking it. Because I like so much of the music, because I like the energy, because I like just how much Adam Rifkin commits to the bit. I like some of the cast. I like everybody that basically isn't Edward Furlong or
James DeBello,
speaking of Cabin Fever.
James DeBello is on my list of scariest actors. He's number four after Kevin Gage, Richard Brake, and Cole Hauser.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And then Jimmy DeBello.
Yeah. He reminds me so much of, like, the guys that were the worst people in my fraternity.
Yeah, he's charmless, yeah. You know, as is Edward Furlong, I think, in this movie.
He's like a feral animal.
Who, Furlong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I felt so bad for Shannon Tweed.
Yes, for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But it's great to see her in this movie.
It's always nice. I don't mean to sound like it's always
no,
but it is. I like
I'm
Shannon
with you.
Tweed.
I think she's such an underrated actress.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she could have, if she didn't make primarily softcore movies, I think she could have had a career as a legitimate, like, real actress.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she isn't, but you know what I mean. She could have been in a different kind of movie.
She has a screen presence and likability to her.
Absolutely.
That the movies she was in didn't always serve.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
She was required to hump a lot and a little more.
Yeah.
I think if this movie was made in 1975 and was more or less the exact same movie, it would have a massive cult following.
I could see that. Yeah,
and so I think it gets a little bit of a short shrift because it was made at 99 and it's so dumb and it's so obnoxious. Again, all by design. This was exactly the movie that they were trying to make. That I think it gets dismissed as being garbage.
I think they did almost too good of a job.
Perhaps.
Yeah. That's the thing for me. Like, I don't doubt they achieved the movie that they were trying to make, but yeah, it was just whether it be, like, the projectile vomiting or, like, his face getting rubbed in, like, pizza. Like, it's just nasty and, like, in a way that makes me very uncomfortable.
I've seen this movie way too many times.
Yeah, I like, although there's that scene where, like, you know, you're obviously supposed to be, these are our protagonists, they're our quote-unquote heroes of the movie. go kiss, screw those disco idiots.
Yeah, right.
The entire time I'm just like, I would be one of those disco idiots for sure. I'm like, that music's
but
amazing.
We get Natasha Lyonne as a disco idiot, and we get Emmanuel Shrieky.
Oh, yeah. Forgot she was in
and
this.
And what's the other guy's name? Fanboys? Sam?
Sam Huntington.
Sam Huntington.
Playing basically the same part.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's his thing. It's either Mimi Siku from Jungle to Jungle or this guy.
At no point in this movie does he say, I can't believe no one's ever taken a dump on your chest. Which is his immortal line from Not Another Teen Movie.
Oh, I thought that was in Jungle to Jungle.
Also in Jungle to Jungle. The original. Yeah. The French version.
I cannot
believe no one has taken a dump on your chest. Oh.
Let's remake this movie with a Homer Proper.
Oh, la merde. On your chest.
Wasn't there another French movie that was like really big that they remade? Was it just The Birdcage I'm thinking of?
That's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Little Indian Big City was the Jungle.
One. Yeah, right.
I feel like there was another one.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know either. Doesn't matter.
Was Father's Day a French remake?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw that movie opening night.
That came out like Mother's Day weekend.
I saw it opening night.
They really botched that.
I don't know why, but it introduced me to Sugar Ray. And it was like, Sugar Ray is this edgy band in that movie. And then Sugar Ray starts getting played on the radio. I'm like, wait, the fucking band from Father's Day is on the radio?
Boy, do I have a weekend show on Sirius XM for you if you like Mark McGrath.
Oh, what does he host?
It's like on 90s on 9, and they do like the 120 with Mark McGrath. And he basically just does like linking songs and stories. So he's just like, this was a band that... named Len, and they did Steal My Sunshine, and now I'm gonna do like the fucking
My Sunshine from Go.
It is from Go.
Nice. See how it all comes full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then like he'll link it to I don't know, some song that's got like stealing in it.
He has figured out though how to like keep a career going.
Yeah,
whether it's hosting reality TV, mm-hmm. or like Sirius XM shows, or showing up in Sharknado movies. Like, yeah. The dude works.
I don't know why I'm going to go from Mark McGrath to Cato Kaelin, but did you ever notice that Cato Kaelin is in the lobby at every Wizard World Chicago?
No.
He's like a carnival barker.
No, I never did notice.
Yeah. Now you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst thing about Detroit Rock City, I think, is how badly Adam Rifkin, unfortunately, I think, botches the filming of the actual Kiss concert.
Mm.
It doesn't feel like a big show.
Yeah.
He's like too much on the stage. They're shot too much in close up. There's too many cuts. However, and it only lasts for like a second and a half, and I wish it would have gone on for longer. We get one shot
from
inside Gene Simmons' mouth.
Yeah.
And I just think if you're going to go to all the trouble to build that gigantic prosthetic, like, you should use it more.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It is.
Speaking of also great, and this is just because she's adorable and she should have been in more of this movie, Melanie Lynskey should have been in more of this movie. Anytime it was like Huntington and Lynskey, I was in. I was like, this is the movie that I want to be watching.
And there's a genuine sweetness to that stuff. So it's not just a movie that's completely amoral.
That's the thing. It's just like three out of the four guys, I just don't want them to succeed. So it's tough to be invested in the movie where you are actively at odds with the people whose goal you're supposed to want to root for. Yeah.
I'm with you that James DeBello and Edward Furlong seem like scumbags. Giuseppe Andrews is just a weirdo. But he's not a bad guy in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Huntington, obviously, is very sweet. He's like a puppy dog.
Yep.
Lynn Shay plays his mom. The cast is good, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have I turned you around on this movie?
No.
Damn it.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm turned as much as I'll turn. I'll give it that. All right.
Are you an Adam Rifkin fan?
I don't think I've seen anything else of his stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because he did Chillerama, and then what else?
He did a segment of Chillerama.
A segment of Chillerama.
Oh, he's got a whole bunch of movies.
What else?
Psycho Cop Returns.
Nope.
The Invisible Maniac.
Nope.
The Dark Backward.
Nope.
The Last Movie Star with Burt Reynolds.
Nope.
A movie called Look.
Nope.
Tangentially,
I haven't seen any movie other than the 1999 ones, apparently.
The Chase with Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson?
I saw it a long time ago, and it's on my Amazon watch list right now.
Okay. That's a Rifkin joint.
Okay.
You might like that.
I remember kind of liking The Chase back in the day.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay.
Good Henry Rollins performance.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, speaking of Christy Swanson movies.
As we are.
So they released
The
Order.
She falls down the stairs again.
I'm so happy that exists.
That's a real thing.
I'm so happy that exists. They released the order of the schedule for the Music Box of Horrors.
I need to look at it.
It's like they're doing some kind of like active punishment on the audience, because the stuff that they're front loading is the stuff that they should have in the overnights.
Right,
and the stuff that's like overnight is the stuff you would want to see early when you're awake.
Where's Alligator?
It's like 3:30 in the morning.
All right, I'm not coming.
Like, what is... I don't get it.
That was the one that I was going to try to make it out for, but...
Yeah, and they added Halloween 2, and that's at like 5:45 a.m. Like, that'll bring a house down.
Yeah.
Buffy's at 10:30 a.m. Who has the time?
I don't know that I'm dying to see Buffy on the big screen again.
I haven't seen it in a very long time.
I haven't either. I just listened to the We Hate Movies episode on it. It made me want to revisit it. But
I want to revisit it because I forgot that Thomas Jane is in it, too.
He does, yeah. Ben Affleck's in there.
Sometimes I look up like Thomas Jane quotes on IMDb. So,
like you do.
Like one time I was reading it and he has this whole quote and he's just like, yeah, I went to the table read and there's this great looking blonde girl. And I'm just like... Gene loves Swanson.
That's what we came here to do. That's what we're going to motherfucking do. That's my Thomas Jane quote from Boogie Nights.
I love that Thomas Jane has like the leading man look, but then the moment he opens his mouth, he's just like, yeah, I don't know. And then you're just like, oh, genre pieces.
Oh, Punisher fan films. Got it.
All right, what's next?
It's my pick?
Yeah.
I'll go with Dogma.
Okay.
Dogma reminds me that 1999 was a great year,
yeah.
But not because Dogma is a great movie, but because in 1999, Kevin Smith was reaching for the stars, and... makes a really ambitious movie that I don't think works,
mm-hmm.
but that really tries, and I think has such an interesting idea as its plot. The whole notion of these two angels who were expelled from heaven have found a loophole that will get them back in, but it will end up ending existence because it will prove the fallibility of God. And therefore, all of reality will collapse.
Yeah.
I think is so interesting. And then that he still turns it into, like, a dumb Kevin Smith road movie. I'm not even opposed to that. Like, adding Jay and Silent Bob as the two prophets and having them escort Linda Fiorentino on her journey. That's fine. Like, Kevin Smith it up. I'm okay with that.
Mm.
Where the movie doesn't work for me is it's too long. I think the performances are wildly uneven.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I think, unfortunately, and I've said this before about this movie, the screenplay has a great idea, but I think the execution of it is deeply flawed because Kevin Smith has so many ideas and so many thoughts about Catholicism and theology. He doesn't know how to actually dramatize any of them or make them visual. So it's just characters standing around explaining shit to each other. You mean to tell me that blah, 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 blah? Well, actually, it's blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it's that scene after scene after scene.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, it has little demon hockey players. It has a big poop monster.
Mm-hmm.
It has demons and angels and, you know, the wings and action and guns and violence. And I think it's a super interesting movie that I give a pass to because it's trying so hard. And it's so ambitious. And it's like, had Kevin Smith continued down this path, I would have loved to have seen where his career went.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the movie was so difficult in terms of its release and him getting death threats and people protesting it. I think Kevin Smith is a little bit reactionary as a filmmaker. And I think it scared him off of doing anything challenging until Red State, but that has its own problems, you know?
Yeah. So this was another 99 movie where I saw it opening night, big theaters, AMC Barrington.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a rock concert that night. Yeah. Like, it was an event for like high school me going to see the Kevin Smith movie opening night. And I remember, like, I had a big problem with, like, the Affleck Damon movies around that time, where, like, any one that I saw, whether it be this or Good Will Hunting, I was walking out of it, like, in primo douche mode afterwards.
Interesting.
Like, I was, like, all of a sudden, like, a religion expert because I just saw Dogma. And I'm just like, this guy can't even pass trig, and he's telling me about plenary indulgence. And it's like, I'm Jewish and hadn't gone to temple in 7 years. Like, I don't know. I picked up their affect or something, and, like, they were, I guess, heroes of mine at the time. But, yeah, this, when I watched it this time, I had a lot of trouble with it the first hour. And then I think it really rallies in the second half. And I like Alan Rickman throughout. I think he's great like lifts any scene that he's in. But when Ben Affleck turns and goes full evil, like really from that scene on the train onward.
Which he's really good in.
Yeah. I think he's great in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he's like kind of saves the movie for me.
Yeah.
I think it's one of his best performances because he's not because he's like really, really evil, but it's in a disarming way because you like him so much, like for the first half. And it doesn't feel like an about face really either. It feels like a natural progression that you kind of buy as an arc of a character. And I think that he really lifts the rest of the movie. And then I kind of also feel like this is one of the best uses of Jay and Silent Bob in one of Kevin Smith's movies, because very often I feel like they're a little bit too much, especially Jason Mewes. And in this one, I feel like they're kind of just what the movie needs, because otherwise it's going to get like real too much bogged down into religious theorizing. So I don't know. For whatever reason, I think because they're bouncing off of all this other stuff, like it really worked for me in it because they're finding kind of the juvenile base to it. I think Linda Fiorentino, who's an actress I usually like, is kind of a weird fit in this movie.
She was openly miserable during the making of this movie.
Yeah,
she did not like it.
Yeah.
She did not get along with Kevin Smith. And he has said after the fact, I believe on one of the commentaries, during the one scene with Janine Garofalo, he talks about what a delight she was and how if he had it to do over again, he would have cast her in the lead. And I think that automatically raises this movie a letter grade. Not just because I love Janine Garofalo, but because I think she would just deliver this material in a much different way. I think Linda Fiorentino never finds a way to really embrace a lot of the shit she has to say in this movie and seems to kind of resent it. And
And I think Linda Fiorentino is a very good actress in the right type of role. Like,
yes.
She's great as like the
femme
fatale type.
She's a Teresa Russell, where it's like she's got to be right cast
or
correctly.
Or even in like Vision Quest, she's just mysterious and kind of like the girl that you can't understand. Like, she's very good at having like an air of mystery around her. But in this one where she's like supposed to be the person that you're identifying with the most and you're the audience conduit, she's very like, it keeps you at a distance a bit. And it's not like what sinks the movie, because I don't even think the movie sunk or anything, but it definitely, I think with Janine Garofalo, she would have found a more kind of inviting bent to get the audience along the way. So I don't know, this is such a weird movie for me because it also, it's the one where I wish he had, and I don't even know if it's the directing or what, or if it's just the cinematography.
It's both.
If it had more scope to it and more just variety in its visual language and style, this could have been a real, real good movie.
It needs to be better made.
Yeah.
And it's not, because unfortunately he still hadn't really figured out how to direct an epic of this size, how to direct action. So we get to certain scenes and they just fall flat. I mean, the way that it's staged when Matt Damon, spoilers for the end of Dogma, when Matt Damon is stabbed and falls to the ground, even the way that's staged and shot is like an amateur filmmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, and I'm not one to bag on Kevin Smith's directing, because I think his directing usually services the material. I think in Clerks and Chasing Amy, it's like he does exactly what he needs to do.
He makes like early Joe Swanberg movies. Right. So it's like,
but this movie calls for something more.
Yeah.
And his script certainly calls for something more. And both he and I think Dave Klein shot this movie again, his regular DP. And they're just not quite up to what they need to be up to.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. This is one that's Kevin Smith for better, I think, is one of those filmmakers that is so accessible and kind of personable with like his fans and his audience. It's like a Rob Zombie type of thing where you're just always kind of rooting for him for the most part. Yeah. And even like if the movie isn't completely a winner for me, like, I find it very difficult to say bad things about it.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Are you going to see Jay and Silent Bob reboot?
I have a ticket for it.
Do you really? Okay.
Yeah. So because
to the Music Box or to the
Phantom of it?
Okay.
Yeah, the Music Box stuff was way too expensive.
Really?
Yeah. It was like
The first show sold out.
Oh no! You should look at the pricing for it. There's three tiers. There was one where it's like just to be there is $50. One where like you're there and then you also get like a photo, it's like $220. And it's that plus the top level was like $800, and the only difference between the $200 and the $800 one was that you get one-on-one time with Jay and Silent Bob.
Wow.
And I'm just like, that
it's sold out. So there are still a lot of Kevin Smith fans. Yeah,
bless
right.
Good for them.
I'd like to try to make it to the Phantom event just because I'm curious.
I didn't like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, so I'm hoping that this is sort of like goofing on that a lot. So
there's some really inspired stuff in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a complete wash, but I'm not.
Oh no,
fan of it.
Yeah. Doug and I watched it again recently, and it does not hold up.
Yeah,
weirdly enough, it's like 90 minutes of gay panic jokes, and Kevin Smith is so not homophobic. I know that to be true. Like, I know that he is not a homophobic person.
Mm-hmm.
It's 90 minutes of gay panic jokes.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it really doesn't.
I don't know, but I mean, like, I am looking forward to it. I wish it wasn't smack in the middle of Scary Movie Month.
Yeah, me too.
Why couldn't October's. It be this week or something? But
why didn't they switch it with Three from Hell?
Yeah, like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it sure doesn't.
Go figure.
Yeah. If somebody asked me if I liked Dogma, I would say yes. But it's a movie I have a ton of problems with.
Yeah, I would say it's somewhere in the middle of his movies for me.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I still think like my favorites are probably Clerks 1 and 2 and Chasing Amy.
Okay. What are your least favorites?
I haven't seen Cop Out or Red State.
Oh.
Those
might be my two.
I've never been a Mallrats guy.
Okay. Interesting.
What do you have after? And maybe Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back might be my least favorite. Yoga Hosers, I can barely remember.
Sure.
It's harmless. I like Tusk more than most people.
It's fascinating.
Tusk is kind of like a Cabin Fever situation for me.
I could see that.
It's just so following its own path
that I
really enjoy.
I do not dislike it.
Although when I watched and liked it, I think I liked it more because this was pre the fall of Johnny Depp, so I don't know if I would enjoy it anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
All righty.
Okay, so next I will go with Dick.
Yes.
Yes. This was a real highlight for me.
Had you seen it before?
Yes, but I barely remembered it. Okay. And I think it also was one of those movies where I was too young to get what it was doing.
Sure.
Because I was just maybe thinking of it as like 10 Things I Hate About You or American Pie or something like that.
Right.
This is a little clever beast, isn't it, Patrick Bromley? This movie is so disarmingly smart, but silly. And yes. Kirsten Dunst is like, I think I'm old enough now to like, where I was younger, I couldn't divorce my like, is she good or am I just like in love with her?
Right.
Now I'm like, no, she's great. Like
she's great. She's always reminded me of Erica. Like, and I remember seeing this movie and her. I think we saw it with her cousin, and her cousin turning around and saying, "She looks just like you." but this is the movie that she reminds me the most of Erica in.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She's like someone harnessed to the power of the sun.
Yeah, she's very, very bubbly, yes. And I love love the running joke in the movie about her relationship with her brother. Like, it is such a weird relationship where it's like, she's so selfish and she like barely does. And then Michelle Williams is like, well, yeah, but now this means he won't go to Vietnam and probably die. And she's like, well, yeah, I don't like him, but I don't want him to die in Vietnam. Or it's just like, she comes home and then he's upset because he just found out that he's probably going to get drafted to go into the war. And he's like, now you can have my room. So thanks a lot. And then she like runs upstairs crying and you think that she's upset because he might get drafted. And then she's just like, oh my God, I'm getting the room. Like, and she plays it so beautifully. Yeah. Like that she's just terrific in it. And then, she makes me laugh, like, almost everything she does in this movie. Same with Bruce McCullough. Like, almost, like, just him walking makes me laugh.
He and Will Ferrell are both, I think, really funny in this.
Yeah.
And both of them can rub me the wrong way sometimes.
Okay.
I guess less so Bruce McCullough. But a little Will Ferrell goes a long way for me, you know?
I know what you mean.
But I think they are so funny, and the shot of them walking in slow motion
that's what I'm thinking about,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just their whole take on Woodward and Bernstein is so, like, watch All the President's Men and then watch this movie. And their take on Woodward and Bernstein is so funny.
Yeah.
It's such a weirdly non-commercial movie. Again, the fact that it got made, the fact that it was a summer comedy, you know, sold primarily on the basis of its cast, which is top to bottom unbelievable. I mean, everybody in this movie is somebody amazing. But it's like, it was always going to be, I think, a little too clever and then a little too subtle in what it's doing to ever be any kind of mainstream hit.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think that I don't know, one thing that's really neat about it is, I was mentioning how I was expecting it to be kind of like 10 Things I Hate About You and like the 90s teen comedy. But one thing that I was reading was like they were deliberately trying to shoot it in the style of a 1970s comedy.
Right.
And I think it works so well because everything is underplayed and they're not like going for big, stupid set pieces other than maybe like the pot brownies or the cookies or whatever, the pot cookies. But that's like such a little thing. And I even like how the movie's called Dick, so you know there's going to be dick jokes in there, like dick puns. But the ones that they choose to have are really, really funny.
Dick and Frightens Me is my favorite.
I really like You Can't Let Dick Ruin Your Life. and then, or You Can't Let Dick Control Your Life. Yeah. And then the button at the end with You Suck Dick on the banner is so like great and funny and triumphant and everything. It works like in three different ways at once. It's
Dan Hedaya's performance as Richard Nixon is
God, second best performance of the decade from him after Clueless. I mean, but those are like, he should have won two Oscars for those two movies.
He is pretty great in Clueless.
He's amazing in Clueless.
What is it? I have a something and a shovel. I doubt you'll
a
be
shotgun
missed.
And a
shotgun and a shovel. I doubt you'll be missed.
Yeah.
Or when he just tells Brittany Murphy, you're in my chair.
Yeah.
He's great in that movie. But no, he's unbelievable. I had posted something when I was watching this on Twitter about how Kirsten Dunst reminds me of Erica, and I don't remember who, but they replied with, like, Dan Hedaya's performance is my favorite cinema depiction of Richard Nixon ever.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fair assessment.
I agree. Like, I mean, one thing that's kind of, that I would love to rewatch it and rewatch it with watching Nixon before or after.
Right.
I made the mistake of watching the director's cut of Nixon the most recent time I've seen Nixon. I've seen Nixon way too many times.
Interesting.
It's like another The Doors situation.
It's weirdly watchable.
Yeah. But the theatrical cut is the way to go with Nixon. Director's cut is too much Nixon.
Oh, okay.
I love that. Shit, what was I going to say? Like, the whole fantasy sequence of Michelle Williams falling in love with Dan Hedaya.
Just the whole subplot that she's in love with Richard Nixon and like singing Olivia Newton-John to him.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
And like, and that's why he deletes the 18 minutes of tape is because he thinks that everybody's going to think he was having an affair with a 15-year-old girl.
All the stuff about Watergate and how they were actually deep throat, it's all just so clever the way that it backs into all of the conspiracy stuff.
It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
It for sure is in my top 10 of 99.
Nice.
Yeah. And it came out of nowhere because it was something.
And Dunst that, like, had this and Drop Dead Gorgeous in 99.
Yeah. She was, for my age group, she was kind of like, Winona Ryder was maybe like when I was in elementary school.
Okay.
So she wasn't quite, she was like the one generation before me.
Got it.
Dunst was my Winona Ryder. Got so it. Like, I just adored her and everything. And
yeah.
Now I'm just, with distance, I'm noticing she was great in a lot of really good movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have my issues She's with
crazy
Drop Dead Gorgeous. She is, as evidence on our last nine from 99.
Yeah.
But she is not one of them. She's great in that movie because she's very sincere.
Double feature, crazy slash beautiful with face slash off.
Nice. I like where your head is at.
I would totally watch a Face Off remake if it was Dunst and Michelle Williams.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Michelle Williams, again, kind of went the sad bastard route with her filmography, but she's really funny in this movie.
Yeah, she is really funny in this movie.
And the end credits are the greatest end credits of any movie ever.
What was the end credits?
It's just them,
again?
Like, dancing. And
oh, yeah, they're like roller
around.
Skating around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the greatest thing ever.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Real, 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 real good movie.
Okay, next. My pick.
Yes.
Bringing Out the Dead.
Yeah.
Underrated Scorsese movie.
Oh, absolutely.
This was a movie that we saw opening night in 99, and it ended.
I love this story.
Erica and I both really liked it, and a friend of ours who was with us said that we only said we were liking it because we thought we were supposed to. Which is not the case. I just actually like it. I love Robert Richardson's photography. I love.
Are you still friends with that person?
Yeah.
Okay.
She stood up in our wedding. I love the performances, the supporting cast. I mean, Nicolas Cage is great.
Yeah.
And again, anytime you see a great Nicolas Cage performance, it just makes you long for great Nicolas Cage performances. But everybody's good in this movie.
Yep.
Patricia Arquette is really, really good. But the triptych of John Goodman, Ving Rhames, and for my money, especially Tom Sizemore, is amazing. All three of those guys are sitting. Sizemore's my favorite.
Yeah, I was going to ask you who's your favorite of his ambulance partners.
The scene of them when they're cruising, driving real fast to Janie Jones by the Clash, and Sizemore just has this fucking possessed look in his eyes, like he's enjoying this way too much.
Yeah.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. Cliff Curtis is amazing as this drug dealer.
Everything in the Oasis is amazing. Like, this movie's so well shot and just visualized and concept. Like, just the way that it looks, it makes like a crack house look like I want to go to the crack house. That looks like
even
the most
Mark
relaxing
Anthony
place.
Is good.
Yeah. No, this movie's great. This might be the one of the lists that I've seen the most. I go back to this movie a lot.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I watch this movie maybe at least once every 2 years.
Okay.
I just always find my way back to it. And I think part of it is that, and I'm not going to say, I don't know, when you're depressed, sometimes like every movie is about depression. You know how sometimes that can happen. But like this one, I feel like is a real hug of a movie if you're like feeling sad.
Sure.
And I think it does a really interesting thing where, the mood of the movie really puts you in the headspace of the Nicolas Cage character where it's, he can't do anything right. Everybody he wants to save, he can't save. Everybody who doesn't really want to save are the ones that he's saving. Doesn't realize until the end that he's putting a burden on himself that he'd never needed to.
Right.
Like, his job is to be there and to do the best that he can. But he's the one absorbing all the grief.
Grief mop.
He's a grief mop. He doesn't need to be a grief mop. But there's so many like little, and it's a Paul Schrader script, and there's so many like really beautiful truisms that they have kind of peppered throughout the screenplay. The voiceover narration is really solid, and just it nails that, am I awake? Am I asleep, bleary-eyed, what is real type of mood and atmosphere, and overnight feel that Scorsese's so good at, like he did with After Hours also, and then Taxi Driver with a lot of those scenes. And I don't know, this is also just like, of the Scorsese movies, this is probably his most compassionate in a lot of ways.
Okay.
It really draws me back. And I think Nicolas Cage is... They every once in a while, like it seems like every 3-4 years, you get a Mandy or you get a Joe or you get you know, a movie like this where they find everything that's good about him and give him space to do it, and it all makes sense for that character. So this one really focuses in on like his manic energy, but then he's also so good when he's playing like that inward sullen type.
He's just sad and haunted.
And I love the scenes where like the boss won't fire him and he just wants to be fired.
Yeah,
and
there's
stuff
a
like
streak
that.
Of absurdity that runs through the whole thing that's really interesting because it is really heavy in terms of what it has to say about guilt. And of course it's about guilt because it's a Scorsese movie. But I think what keeps it off of people's lists of, you know, top Scorsese movies is that it's weirdly shapeless. It's episodic.
It's like an anthology almost.
Yeah, but it lacks sort of a solid spine. In terms of its structure, it's super episodic, but there's no like one overarching story necessarily.
Even the ending, it just kind of stops.
I mean, it stops in a logical place, but it does just kind of stop. It doesn't build to anything. You would almost think the Cliff Curtis sequence would be the climax, but then the movie keeps going after that. So it's structured in a weird way.
And I find it interesting because it was the same studio in the same year, but it feels very married to Summer of Sam in the style. Maybe it's just the New York and kind of the grittiness to it. But I think the reason why I like both movies is a little bit because I associate them so closely with each other. So
Really good movie.
Yeah, I really like it a lot. I also like the aspect that you're just seeing the ins and outs of a profession. And that's always kind of a pleasure to see. I asked my brother-in-law, he's in the medical field, he's a nurse. I watched it for this time and I was just like, you know, a lot of paramedics, are they kind of weird and stuff? And then he was just like, well, what do you mean? And then I was explaining the movie to him. And then like, he's like, no, it's nothing like that. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'll keep my movie poetry to myself then.
Is this based on a novel or is this? What I thought.
Yeah. The screenwriter. Or not a screenwriter, but like, yeah, his story was adapted from his book or whatever.
Good stuff. I've never read the novel. But yeah, good one.
Yeah. Okay. So I will go, let's see, we've got two more left. So I will go with the Thomas Crown Affair.
I like what you did. I think we both were doing something intentionally without ever actually articulating that that's what we were doing.
Well, that's because I remember like I didn't do that last time and we ended on something really weird. Like, I was like, first, let's do Eyes Wide Shut, and then last was, like, fucking
whatever,
like Universal Soldier The Return. So, Thomas Crown Affair was the one that kind of dropped the most for me this time. I noticed a lot of 50 Shades of Grey comparisons.
Interesting, okay.
Because the 50 Shades of Grey movie reminds me a lot of the woman who isn't as rich as the man, and he puts her in planes and lavishes her with gifts and trips.
He has a Chronicles of Riddick poster hanging in his room.
Yeah. I couldn't get that out of my head this time. And Chronicles of Riddick, I mean, I couldn't.
Of course.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I thought the heist, like, the first heist sequence is way too long. Yeah. It's, like, 30 minutes. It's crazy. But they're, judged by comparison of kind of like the romance novel middle portion of it, it kind of made me like the heist parts better. I remember liking this movie a lot more and thinking that they had like that Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo had like this electric chemistry. And this time, for whatever reason, I thought individually they were good, but Brosnan's almost not in it enough, especially at the end.
Sure.
And then
it becomes much more of her story.
And I love Rene Russo.
Yeah.
And I do think Rene Russo is a very sexy woman. But I think in this movie, they kind of underline it more than they need to.
Okay.
To the point where it's over the top, where she's vamping.
Okay.
And Dennis Leary's cool. I mean, I like that he's kind of just not riffing and he's just playing a normal guy and his character
is smoking through a chain link fence.
Yeah, and for a character that could very easily be like Will Patton in Entrapment and not very interesting, although you like the actor, I think like his actual character story is pretty interesting.
I like where he ends up a lot.
Yeah.
The story he tells at the end.
Yeah. That he's just a good guy.
Right.
Like he's just and you wouldn't think that because it's atypical casting for like the dude who ends is just being like, wow, he's a really solid dude.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't seen the original Thomas Crown Affair.
Nor have I.
I read the differences between the two, which I won't spoil here, but the stuff that I read about the plot and where it ends in the original was more satisfying to me on paper than the...
this is in practice?
This was in practice, so I don't know. But I can't get out of my head how much anytime I see Pierce Brosnan in anything, he just looks like he's like selling cologne or watches or like some kind of men's wear like thing.
He's,
like I made the joke to Rob that like his farts probably smell like musk.
Dracar Noir. he's just sort of called upon to wear a suit well.
Yeah.
And look great. I mean, he's capable of giving good performances because did you ever see The Matador?
Yeah.
He's interesting in that movie. Like,
and I generally like him.
I like watching him and stuff, but he's just, he's a clothes hanger, you know, in this movie.
Yeah.
I enjoy this movie. I think it's like a good Sunday afternoon WGN movie. I wouldn't want to watch it on WGN because they would cut out like the sex and stuff. And that's part of what I think is interesting about this movie is that it is a movie that's made for adults.
Yeah, it's like a sexy movie made for grownups.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often.
I think it rented
well at Blockbuster.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's very well directed. Mm-hmm. I think John McTiernan's a really good, you know, I'm not saying anything surprising when I say, hey, Jonathan McTiernan, he's a really good director.
Oh, you're on formal terms with him? It's Jonathan now?
Is it John?
It's John.
John McTiernan. I don't know why I called him Jonathan McTiernan.
I called Jim Cameron Jim Cameron. You called Jonathan McTiernan Jonathan McTiernan.
John McTiernan.
Yeah.
John McTiernan, I think, you know, is a good director.
Yeah.
I think it looks great, but it is kind of surfacey.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with you that, like, the beginning drags with the heist. The middle drags a little bit with the romance novel. I didn't even really factor their chemistry into it because I was just enjoying watching the two of them posture as movie stars.
Yes.
And Rene Russo never really got a chance like this.
Not really, because even like when she's the other half of a romantic pairing, like in Tin Cup or something, it's more she's playing support to the male lead. Yeah.
And I probably like her better in something like Tin Cup, but I like that she's given essentially the lead role of this movie, and Pierce Brosnan is really more the supporting character. The stuff with her and Dennis Leary is probably more interesting than the stuff with her and Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
But again, it's a movie that I come down on the side of liking.
The thing that I like most, I think, about the movie, aside from like the Dennis Leary part, is maybe the fact that it's so... You're conditioned by watching these heist movies and caper movies to think that there's going to be like a lot of rugs pulled out from under you.
Right.
But when it comes to the emotional relationship of the two, they're being very straightforward with one another.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's almost like that's the twist is that you don't, that they're not trying to like fool one another or like con the other one.
Right.
It's that, no, this is it, but it's like they don't know how much to trust each other and things like that. So I don't know, like stuff I could talk about it and like it more than I like it when I'm watching it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But before we forget, like, let's tell our audience about the Enter the Thomas Crown Affair Luxury Sweepstakes pamphlet that came in with my DVD that I bought for $2 at Half Price Books that nobody ever took out. God bless them.
Did you buy it for this show?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't have it. So,
was this one of your picks?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's because I hadn't seen it in a long time.
No,
so it was
sense.
It was more that than I liked it a lot.
Sure.
I'm going to read you. So, okay, how to enter. Sorry to those of you who have access to the internet, because this one is a 3x5 postcard with your name, age, and address, including zip code and telephone number to the Thomas Crown Luxury Sweepstakes. CO Keystone Mailing Service, P.O. Box 18308, Pittsburgh, PA 15236. So, Rob, you could just drive this over. I know you're in Philly, but you're closer than I am, so you got more chances to win. I'm going to dramatically read some of this copy here. Prepare for the affair and the sweepstakes of the year! Enter the Thomas Crown Affair Luxury Sweepstakes, and you could win these fabulous prizes. First prize, first class trip for two to St. Thomas and St. Croix, where LaCroix was made.
Not bad.
In the grand prize. Oh, the grand prize. Two first class round trip tickets on United Airlines. 5-day, 4-night stay at the Point Pleasant Resort in St. Thomas, and a 4-day, 3-night stay at the Chennai Bay Beach Resort in St. Croix. 1 64-inch Zenith high-definition television. That's a tube TV.
Mm-hmm. High-definition circa 1999.
1 Zenith DVD player. This was one that I don't understand. 1 each of the Thomas Crown Affair on VHS and DVD.
Hey now, you can have it on both formats.
And the ultimate carry-on travel bag. Can you imagine if you were in 2019 and still using your Thomas Crown Affair?
I'd be all over that
carry-on
shit.
Carry-on bag, yeah. What if you, imagine if like they lost it.
Unforgivable.
Irreplaceable.
Yeah.
You'd have to go on eBay stat.
Right. Check eBay for a...
Yeah.
35 millimeter trailer of the Thomas Crown Affair.
Fair enough. We'll do. So I highly recommend you rewind and listen to where to send your 3x5 postcard. And,
yeah.
You know, the contest ended in January 2000, but best of luck.
We have one more movie.
Yeah.
And of all the movies on this show that could have their own podcast, there's
really
a handful.
Should have its
Dogma
own show.
Could probably have its yeah. own podcast. A couple of these could have their own podcast. Mm-hmm. This one is one that Doug and I talked about doing for years and never got around to.
Yeah.
But that is Fight Club.
Yes.
David Fincher's Fight Club. This was my first time watching it in 10 years.
Okay.
I last watched it when the Blu-ray came out because I had to review it. I was writing for DVD Verdict at the time, so I reviewed the Blu-ray for DVD Verdict.
Do you remember the joke on the DVD menu or the Blu-ray menu?
No.
The Blu-ray menu home screen has never been kissed, and it stays up there for 30 seconds, and you think that it's like, wait a minute, did I get the wrong DVD? And then, like, it turns into Fight Club.
Oh, always the pranksters.
Although,
I wish I was
quick enough to press play and see if
they
actually
had Never
Been Kissed.
Branching option of Never Been Kissed?
Yeah, it turned into Never Been Kissed.
Would I rather watch Never Been Kissed than Fight Club? That becomes the question. this is my first time seeing it in 10 years, and it was like seeing a different movie.
Yeah.
Fight Club, you have always said very astutely, is a young man's movie.
Yeah. I change my mind on that all the time.
Interesting.
So this is the first time I need to kind of go through my history with this movie, though.
By all means.
In 99, I saw it like 2 weeks after it came out, and I didn't get it at all. I was just like, it was another like the Matrix thing where I was expecting one thing and I got something else, and I just couldn't keep up, and I knew I needed to see it again. The second time I saw it was when it was on DVD, and I loved it, and I was like, very much the young man's movie. I'm like, this is blowing my mind. Then if I wasn't thinking this already, I was sort of primed at 18 years old to be like, yeah, life is unfair for a white man and stuff like that. It
boy.
Was like teaching me all the wrong lessons. Yeah. And I never like acted on any of these things, but I was having like this existential angst over something that like I never even experienced because I wasn't like in a dead end job or anything like that. I was about to go to school. Like it didn't make any sense, but like it resonated with me, I guess. I don't know. And then I grew up, and then it turned into like, wah. Like, wah, these poor guys. Like, I'm evolved from them, and they seem like little babies. And now I see it, and I see a satire. And I see that how much David Fincher isn't postulating this ideology. He's making fun of these guys throughout the whole movie, and that's kind of where I land on it right now. And okay. I think as a satire, it has a lot of the good and the bad of that, which is the excess is too much excess. So I understand what he's doing, but it's a punishing experience. But I think it's kind of brilliant also.
Yeah, I'm torn. I definitely had my mind blown in 99 when I saw it, probably opening night or the next night. Not by the twist, but just by the audacity of it and the filmmaking of it and it does a lot of it's a very well-made movie. You know, mm-hmm. David Fincher is a good director, and so it's very well-made. And I think it was probably my number two movie of 99 back in the day. I loved the DVD when it came out. It had like 4 commentaries. I think I listened to all of them. The Fincher, Edward Norton, Brad Pitt one, I think is still really good and worth listening to. Watching it this time, I thought so much of it was like bratty horseshit.
Like, sure. Yeah.
I agree that there's a lot of satire in it, but I also don't know how much of... Do you think everything that Tyler Durden is espousing, David Fincher is making fun of?
Yes.
Stuff like, the stuff you own owns you.
Yeah.
You think he's making fun of that?
I do, and the reason
I'm
being...
I'm not convinced.
Okay. The reason why I think that is because I think that he's taking it to the extreme of showing that this guy, Tyler Durden, with a ludicrous ideology is something that these empty vessel morons will follow because they have no thoughts of their own, mm-hmm. and they're upset and they don't know why. And the reason why they are empty vessels is because they're just empty people. Like,
right.
And it's like, what do you expect? Like, you're an empty vessel of a person. Why would you have this great, amazing life? You've got no drive or creativity or originality or passion. So, like, what do you expect? You're going to be just kind of like a cube rat and stuff like that. And I think, like, the thing that really kind of struck home with me on this viewing was Tyler Durden is kind of like a predictor of, like, YouTube channels. It's like these morons who have their own YouTube channels and then have, like, this myriad of followers who just are, like, hanging on every word that this guy has. And he's, like, this pseudo-celebrity, but he's not famous for anything other than just having, like, a bunch of nonsense that he says. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I took away from it. So I think that, it's, like, if you like, really kind of pay attention to, like, what Tyler Durden's saying, it's just, like, yeah, the world sucks and we got our bad rap. We should punch each other in the face.
Right.
Or, like, we should become terrorists. Or, like, we should all join a cult together where, your freedom is now co-opted by me.
Right.
So you have no freedom. You have even less freedom than you did before. But instead of being a slave, quote unquote, to your possessions and your meager existence, you're a slave to me and whatever my whim is. Right. So I think Fincher's very aware of that. And
I think a lot of that stuff is totally true. And I think a lot of it is satirical. And it was satire that was lost on so many of the people that loved it.
Yeah, it's definitely like a Boondock Saints type of situation where people are learning the wrong lessons from it.
Well, Boondock Saints is just bad across the board. There's not like a level on which to watch Boondock Saints where, like, oh, this movie's actually really good and profound.
Yeah.
But the people who love Boondock Saints probably also like Fight Club for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Because fast forward 20 years and these guys would just be incels, right? I mean, it's like same, right?
Yeah.
So he's identifying a certain type of white man before that had kind of been codified through social media and stuff. So I agree that it's satirizing a lot of that, but I just think some of the brattiness I really like, and the way that he inserts it into the filmmaking, I think it is really funny that he does the shot of the dick at the very end of the movie. Like, this whole thing has been a Tyler Durden prank, and, you know, that's kind of funny. But then there's other stuff like, how does the stuff with, like, the support groups in the first 20 minutes, how does that stuff sit with you? It seems to be played for laughs, and
I think it is, yeah.
That's fucked up.
I think it's fucked up, but I think, like, if you're viewing it through kind of the eyes of the narrator of the movie and not saying this is what the filmmaker's philosophy is, then it goes down easier. So, like, I always read it more as this guy is just, kind of, I don't know, like, just so wrongheaded that he's going to, because he's not as poorly off as, like, these people who have terminal illnesses, like, he's going to feel better. So it's this completely self-serving, selfish kind of support that he's giving.
Yeah, that stuff I don't mind. Like, so, the notion of what he's doing is fucked up.
Yeah.
But I agree that it's, again, it's taken to such an extreme that it could be seen as funny. But when we're supposed to be laughing at the other people in the support group when they break down in tears, or when the one girl is like, would someone fuck me, please, or whatever. Like, I don't know. I remember in 99 reading an interview with Paul Thomas Anderson, and he was not cool about this movie. He was like, wishing testicular cancer on David Fincher because of all the testicular cancer jokes. And I think he had just lost his father to cancer.
Oh, okay.
And he had Magnolia out the same year. And yeah. Magnolia is literally the polar opposite yeah. of Fight Club. Fight Club is arch and snotty, and Magnolia is open-hearted and sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And you can like or dislike either one. I'm not saying one is right, you know, but they're just very different in the way that they approach the world.
Yeah. And I like Magnolia more than Fight Club.
But, I do too, yeah. but and I'm not advocating for one over the other. I'm just yeah. saying they're very, very different in their approaches.
Yep.
And at the time, I remember reading that and being like, whoa, Jesus, take it easy, Paul Thomas Anderson. Mm-hmm. Like, you are very upset. And watching it this time, I finally kind of understood where he was coming from. I'm not wishing cancer on anybody, but I see where having lived through something like that, where you could really see...
It's very glib and, like,
it's
uncaring.
It's so fucking glib.
It's very uncaring of, like, somebody's... It's like I remember Roger Ebert had the he was so offended by the movie The Bucket List because he had cancer.
I've never seen The Bucket
because
List.
He had cancer, and then like Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson have cancer in The Bucket List, but they're doing like all this world traveling
right.
and stuff, and he's like, I can't even get out of bed, or yeah. like it's tough for me to go to the bathroom and stuff like that. Like this movie is. You know, beyond the pale in terms of like it has no concern for understanding what yeah. the real thing is, and I can completely understand where somebody like Paul Thomas Anderson would be coming from with this with David Fincher. I don't know. I mean, like, I don't like everything in it. There's a lot of stuff in it. Just this kind of goes back to like the Detroit Rock City thing, where like it's such a gross movie, like ugly, like yeah. gooey. Wet like that, like even like I mean, like Helena Bonham Carter is playing basically the corpse bride. I mean, it's just like, and the way that they treat her in the movie is there's a very fine line between like how much is it knowing and how much is it just being the thing that's ugly. So I see where you're coming from. I think with the Tyler Durden thing, that's the area where it is most in focus for me as being satire. And then I think that from reading the best movie you're ever book, mm-hmm. the Fight Club chapter is amazing.
Okay.
That's the one where I felt like Norton and Pitt and Fincher were really in on the joke. Like, because I remember Norton was saying, he's like, he read the script and the first thing he asked David Fincher, he's like, the only thing I want to know is like, you see this as a comedy, right? And then Fincher's like, yeah, and that's why he signed on for it.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I've always seen the satire of it, and I've always liked that about it. I think just this time more than ever before, I was seeing too much of the being the thing in other yeah. areas. You know, I don't yeah. think this movie is saying, like, join a fight club, become a terrorist. It's not actually advocating for any of the things that it claims to be advocating for, but I mm-hmm. think in the margins, there's all this other shit going on that it seems to be unaware of.
Yeah.
And I just, again, the same way that when we talked about Drop Dead Gorgeous, I was like, oh, maybe I've kind of lost my taste for this kind of humor. Some of that may be true of Fight Club also, that I just require a little more sincerity.
Yeah.
Because this movie is shockingly insincere.
Yes. And I mean, I've gone on to like other Fincher movies a lot more, and I don't go back to Fight Club too often. But I mean, there's just so much, even if it's like not great thought, there's so much like effort and thought put into every frame
definitely.
Of this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
That it really sort of stands out as being ambitious.
Yes. Definitely.
And impressive in terms of its, I don't know, drive, I guess, for what it's trying for.
And again, as a studio yeah. movie in 1999,
yeah.
it was the bearer of such good things in terms of what we thought was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The future of cinema seems so bright because of movies like Fight Club, because...
Yeah. In the book, this is the one that felt the most like you hear about, like, the reckless 70s, because it
yeah.
was like Bill Mechanic, who I think was the CEO of Fox at the time, like, he... lost his job over this movie
right.
and like he was the one who was just like, fuck it, make it
yeah.
I want to see it,
right?
And like it was just sort of like them
that's
playing
so exciting,
just them as the Wild West. He's like, I don't even right. care if this loses money. And then like once you hear, you know, Fox owned by Rupert Murdoch, and Rupert Murdoch's yelling at Bill Mechanic. It's like, well, how can I not be on Bill Mechanic's side
for
on this
sure.
one? So yeah, right. yeah.
So I'm excited that it got made.
Yeah,
I think it inspired a lot of badness, and the movie can't be faulted for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Wolf of Wall Street in the sense that
right.
It's unfortunate that, like, okay, so a lot of people sometimes will point to The Wolf of Wall Street as having similar problems where, you know, people learn the wrong lessons from it. It's like, well, but the last scene of that movie
right.
is him going back and selling more bullshit to an adoring audience, and that audience could basically be a movie theater audience.
And the difference is The Wolf yeah. of Wall Street, because I know Scorsese's body of work so well and I know yeah. who he is as a filmmaker, I have no question where he comes down.
Yeah.
I still question where Fincher comes down, because I've seen his other movies mm-hmm. and I've seen something like Gone Girl and I'm like, ah, you have some issues.
He's very nihilistic. Although, oddly enough, one of the movies that I think is the least nihilistic of his is Zodiac of all movies, because I think he does
yeah.
have a fair
no,
amount
I
of,
think it's like one of his most humanistic movies.
He has a lot of compassion for these guys
yes.
who are, you know, searching for the truth and everything like that.
That's it's why it's kinda, his best movie.
Yeah, I think it's like his best movie by far, and
yeah.
it's like that and Mulholland Driver 1 and 2 for best of the 21st century so far for
I
me.
Would probably agree with that.
Yeah. So
anyway, that was our 9 from 99.
Yes.
9 interesting and or good and or great movies.
Can you imagine in 20 years when we do our 9 from 19 show and how much we're going to talk like this about what about
Hobbs and Shaw?
Yeah.
What was that Diane Keaton movie where they become cheerleaders?
Poms?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
If you guys want in the comments, I can't promise that you can vote for another 9 from 99 show, but if there are movies you would like to hear us talk about or would like to hear us talk about, you can certainly suggest some titles in the comments and we will think about it. Part of the appeal of doing this show for us is our ability to pick stuff that we want to rewatch. So if we're being assigned movies to watch, it might not be as fun, but you might put ideas in our heads. It's like, yeah, I would totally like to rewatch, you know, South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut. So by all mm-hmm. means, you can recommend titles in the comments if you like. As always, you can rate, review, subscribe in iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie, and email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. And thanks, Adam. This is always fun.
Yeah, this is always a fun show. I wish 2000 was as good as this year was, because right now we're tracking to do 0 from 2000.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.